Hello and welcome to the March 27, 2011 StocksProspects.com podcast. This is going to be a season preview podcast. I'm here with the usual crew, Ian, Hattie, and Melon. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
What's up?
Hey.
How you doing, Mike?
Pretty good. Three of us, at least, just got back from Fort Myers over the last few days. We spent 4 or 5 days down there and got a lot of in at minor league camp. So we're going to cover that a bit. We're going to cover what we saw at minor league spring training, who impressed us, who didn't. And then we're going to kind of get into our season preview in terms of maybe talking about what minor leaguers are there that are going to help the big club this year, what prospects might be taking the most strides this year, and just basically just a general preview of the top prospects in the system. So to start off, like I said, we were down in Fort Myers from, I want to say the 15th or the 16th till about the 20th or the 21st. A collection of five or six of us were down there. Got to spend most of the time at minor league spring training, seeing the lower level guys and the higher level guys. So I guess I'll put my first question over to Melon. Who impressed you the most during your time down there?
I'll start position players. I'll say that Jeremy Hazelbaker and Oscar Tejedo were two guys that stuck out just right off the bat. You know, with Hazelbaker, we heard the report to him putting on some weight. I know that a number of 30 pounds was thrown off. People were kind of jumping at that saying, did he really put that much weight on? I don't know if it was exactly 30 pounds, but he definitely looks much more filled out than he did last year. You know, he was more on the skinny side, very similar frame and built to Josh Reddick. Now he's much more physically filled out from the shoulders all the way down through his lower body. And he looked pretty good. I talked to someone down there who had seen a lot of Hazelbaker last season. And the first thing that he said was he just looks a lot less raw to him than he did last season. And as we know, he had troubles with his strikeouts, basically swinging and missing a ton last season. And I think that part of that was just him being so raw. And not being really up to speed with professional pitching. And I expect him to start cutting down on that heading into the season. And I think there's some power there that can start to show, you know, potential to show average to solid average power over the course of the season. Tejeda, he's just, you know, we've talked about it. I think we talked about it a little bit last time with the physical development of players, and he's just experiencing that development and becoming more like a man. You know, he was signed when he was 16, so, and now he's 21. So he's kind of grown up in the Red Sox organization, and you look at him now and he starts to show some of the traits of a Major League Baseball player at the plate in terms of how he sees pitches, you know, the balance that he shows, how he just kind of like spits at curveballs that start diving into the dirt on him. You know, he's really starting to mature and that those tools are starting to mesh with the physical development. I think that he's, you know, not long for a struggle in Double A when the season gets going, and you're going to see that the type of stuff that he did last year, and hopefully, you know, more of a consistent plane of doing that. So those were two position players right there that jumped out at me.
Did you get to see much of him in the field?
You know, not really much in the field. You know, I didn't really get a good read on him at second base. Looking at him, I don't know if he's likely to stick at second base. I kind of think that he might end up moving out over to left field as he gets going. One, because, you know, the Red Sox potentially have, you know, Dustin Pedroia in the infield for the next six straight seasons at second base. And also just because I think he still might be growing a little bit to hit, and he can even fill out a little bit more. I think that possibly left field, you know, might be more in line where he's going to be able to play at the major league level.
So let me ask you this question. And this is more of a general philosophy question. Why not just do that now? Like, I understand why teams play these games with not moving players until they have to move. He's clear. Like, if you look at him and Theo has made comments over the over spring training, and Tito has made comments, he's not going to stay at second. He's big, and he's not exactly elegant as a fielder over there. And we have a second baseman for the next 5 or 10 years. Why not just move him to third or left field?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if maybe they just want to keep him there as long as possible, and maybe it's their opinion, but they feel that potentially other organizations may view him at second base, and if he can take some strides and look a little bit better at second, maybe if they do move him down the line, that it'll attract him as a second baseman to other organizations. I'm not exactly sure, as I said, why they just don't move him out there, but it does.
I think that's a good point, Ian. It's just like, I mean, It seems like every organization does that. They just wait until the last minute possible. But I mean, the Red Sox consider themselves on the advancement on the advanced side of like thinking. They try to get ahead of the game and think of everybody else. Why don't they take that theory that you just advanced and say, if this guy's not going to stick in second, let's just forget about it. It was an experiment for a year. Let's do it. I mean, maybe that's a good point.
It just seems like all odds are against him. There's nothing other than value as a second baseman being good for a prospect or a trade prospect. Everything else is lined up against him. It seems like, why not just make him more comfortable as a left fielder? I mean, to me, he just reminds me of Alfonso Soriano, who did play second base in the majors, but was one of the worst second basemen in the majors and eventually had to move to left field like we're talking about now. So why not just advance that? And maybe it brings his bat along quicker because he's not working on his fielding all the time.
Or maybe, I mean, it could be slower because he has to learn a whole new position as well. Maybe that's part of their thinking, but
that's true.
I think I tend to agree with you. And I think if it's 95%, he's not going to stick at second, why not just do it now and get that over with? But maybe they think it's 60% he can stick at second. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I saw at least one point last year when I went to Salem where he did make a nice play or two, which at second base. I mean, he potentially could stick. It's not like there's no possible way he could fill the position, but I do think that's a great point you do make, Ian. It's just maybe it's not quite as obvious as we may look at it to be at this point.
I mean, he has a great arm. I'd say he has a plus arm. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but I think he could be a right fielder. You know, and that position has a lot more value than left field. It's still, you know, a useful position, and prospects who are good right fielders have a lot of value.
It's true.
Interesting thought. Well, we'll see how that plays out over the season. All right, I'm going to go over to Hatfield. What can you give me a couple players that impressed you in Fort Myers?
Well, I admittedly, I was only down there for a couple days myself, so I didn't see quite as many guys as I'd hoped to. But I know one player that I got to see that stood out a bit was Anthony Renato. You know, actually getting to see him more than anything, you know, right. It's kind of this big unknown. One thing I did notice out of him is he did tend to get a little, left some pitches up. I know Mellon noticed this as well. You know, he did seem where he just would kind of get under the ball. I know, Chris, you said he was dropping his arm slot as well. You know, the mechanics.
He seemed kind of overzealous.
He did, and I think that would have been his first start of the spring at that point, correct?
It was. He told me, yeah.
Yeah,
it was
so
the first time he had gone.
Yeah, I mean, and that's understandable, especially now that we know he didn't even pitch in instructs, I think you said in your article on ESPN Boston, Mike.
Right.
So
yeah, I mean, he told me the day before, I had interviewed him that day before, and he was really jazzed up about it. He said, tomorrow's my first professional anything, and I've been thinking about this since I was drafted however many months ago. So he was pretty jazzed up about it. I can understand him being overzealous on the mound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just looked like he was tired in the second inning, to be honest. You know, first start, the first inning was very good. His fastball was, I can't remember if he threw 11 or 12 fastballs and 10 of them, if he threw 12, 10 of them were 93, one of them was 92, and one of them was 94. So he was stuck on 93, just pinning it right in at 93. I mean, it was pretty impressive that he could do that for so many pitches. I think at one point it was like 6 or 7 straight pitches, 93 miles an hour. In the second inning, he was down around 91 consistently. So I think he was just a little bit tired. You know, first time on the mound the whole spring, you know, guys aren't there yet.
Mm-hmm, for sure. But it was interesting. It was good to get to see him up close. I mean, I had some worries after seeing the video of him down on the Cape warming up, or I guess it's up on the Cape for me now, but seeing him that he didn't have much leg drive, but that got put to rest when I incorrectly said that they'd mess with his mechanics, could call and calling me out on that, Ian. But it was interesting to get to see him, get to see what he has. I mean, he reeled off.
I don't think I called you out on that. That's...
No. I mean, you caught me.
I was just hoping that they didn't.
Yeah, you caught me. We'll put it that way. You caught a mistake. We'll put it that way. But at any rate, he reeled off a couple of disgusting curveballs. I mean, just nasty, nasty curveballs. So it was good to get to see that pitch in action. I mean, I think he might at first maybe struggle a little bit. They did say he was falling off the first base a little bit. The scout I was sitting there, I think it was a scout I was sitting next to who noticed that. I don't know if you caught that at all, Mellon, but I could see him maybe not struggling early on, but maybe walking a few guys while he gets the mechanics down, and then
definitely,
you know, once he kind of, he'll also strike a ton of guys out too. The stuff's just that nasty.
Hatfield, one thing that you noticed, I remember you saying almost in the second or third pitch, was just kind of noting how insanely wide his stretch is when he's coming off of the mound and his foot lands. It's one of the biggest strides I've ever seen out of any player. I mean, would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. He's so big. He's imposing. What is he, 6'7"?
Yeah.
He's extremely big, and he generates a lot of arm speed. And I think that once he gets going and he's healthy and he feels good and he feels strong, the velocity, he's going to generate a lot of velocity with that fastball, mid-90s, and he can pull down real hard on his curveballs, as Hatfield was saying. It's deep. It's a very deep curveball. It's up there with a, I don't want to throw a comparison, but it's Buchholz style of curveball that comes straight over the top and just breaks completely down through the strike zone with a lot of tight spin. So he those two pitches jumped out as those are legit pitches for him.
Yeah, I remember the last pitch he threw in the outing was a curveball for a strikeout. I think it might have gone into the dirt. I'm not sure if it did or not, but I just remember sitting in the bleachers on that field and just everyone seeing that. There was just a gasp at how disgusting the pitch was. It was intense. So I'm looking forward to maybe catching him in Salem after he gets some innings under his belt.
Yep. Some guys that impressed me that I wanted to kind of note was Sean Coyle. Really impressed me how advanced he is for his age. He just got a really good control of the head of the bat. Just watching him even just bunt or just watching him, it seems like he can hit the ball where he wants to hit it. And that's something that a lot of 18-year-olds don't have. Another guy, Xander Bogaerts, pretty much what we've heard all winter so far since Mellon was down in Instructs. He's just an athlete. He looks like a baseball player. I probably saw 6 of his at-bats over over 3 games, and I think he got a hit in 5 of the at-bats, and several of them were extra base hits. He's just an athlete. He just looks like a baseball player. Still very raw, but you can see that there's a ton of potential there. Two other guys, real quick. Miguel Celestino. Mellon and I kind of watched him put the gun on him for a couple innings. Mellon, do you remember what he was sitting at?
93.
Pretty consistently for his frame. And it looks like he could probably pack on 30 pounds and still – and maybe add a couple of ticks of velocity even from where he is now. So I think he's somebody that could possibly have a breakout season this year, or if not this year, the next year. He's just got to learn to command it a little bit better, but he's a guy that could have a mid-90s fastball when all is said and done. The last guy quickly is Roberto Reyes, who actually was an undrafted free agent out of Lynn English in Massachusetts last year. Really, really impressive bat. Something I haven't seen from an undrafted free agent in a really long time. How much of he just has a high ceiling for his bat. A ton of power there. I saw him take BP, hit a few out. I saw him hit a deep shot in a game for a two-run home run. Really impressed me. My understanding is I didn't get to watch him field all that much to catch the position, but my understanding from the scouts we talked to is that there's not much there in terms of fielding, so they kind of got to build that from the ground up or take him off position, but the bat is there for him. So those are the guys that really impressed me.
Yeah. Can I ask you guys about some sorry.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to move on to next. I wanted to have just Ian ask us some questions about what we saw, who we liked, who we didn't. So Ian, you just run with it, whatever questions you might have.
Well, I guess Mike, you've been going for, this is your fourth year?
It's in some ways it's my fourth. I went for a couple years with my family somewhere between 4th and 6th years.
Mellon, this is your third year?
This is my fourth.
Fourth, and Hatfield, this is your second?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I guess the first question that I've been asking, or I asked last year and I'll ask again this year, is and Mellon, you really addressed it with regards to Hazelbaker, but can you give me an idea of some of the players who, when you saw them in camp last year compared to when you saw them in camp this year, have just made strides beyond what you could have imagined? Let's start with Mike.
The first guy is obvious, would be Tejeda. I think we've pretty much covered that. Let me think who else really.
And I can just open up to the floor.
Open up to the floor. Let me think about that for a second.
I mean, one guy that not necessarily made, I don't know if he necessarily made strides so much as he looked a lot more comfortable with the AAA club that he really wasn't going to stick with than I thought he would was LaVarnway. We saw him take James Shields really, really,
really,
really deep. I mean,
that was a bomb.
The left fielder didn't move. no, he really didn't. He just turned and looked at it and turned back before it was even over the fence.
So the left fielder, big league James Shields?
Pretty much.
Maybe a little bit, yeah.
A little bit, yeah. I mean,
he's like, I'm not going to waste my time on this.
Yeah. I mean, and it surprised me how, you know, because when the time we were down there, especially because one of the days I was there was the day of a split squad grit game in which I think half the club was going to Bradenton. So there were a lot of guys called up from minor league camp. The AAA and AA teams look pretty thin. I think Vinicio was playing for one of the... I think Vinicio was playing in AA or something. It was weird. So there were a lot of guys up. Trick Danforth was playing with AAA. It was a weird day. But LaVarnway looked right at home with that AAA club. And I almost... I don't know. I feel like if it weren't for the fact that Exposito and Wagner were in AAA, he might have had a shot to make that Pawtucket club. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys agree with me, but he just seemed, at least at the plate, to be comfortable enough up there. I really didn't get to see him catch too much or pay attention to him catching a ton, but...
I agree. I think he could hit at the major league level, be an average major league hitter right now.
Okay, so some of the new guys for the first time that you've seen this year, I believe, Hadfield, you saw Brandon Workman, correct?
I didn't. I think it might have been Mellon, yeah.
Oh, Mellon. I saw Workman.
So what were your impressions of him?
He's got pretty good stuff. You know, again, it was his first outing, and he had no fastball command at all. So it was tough to get an idea what his fastball really can do against hitters, because it was just like coming right down the middle of the plate, and guys were pretty much teeing off on it for whatever reason. It was between 92 and 94, and it had a little bit of it had some run across the zone and a little bit of finish at the end. I was hoping that he was going to throw it, and he did. He threw some pretty good curveballs. You know, we'd heard that pitch has been inconsistent for him, and that he's got to sharpen it up. Well, when it is on and he's getting on top of it and spinning it well, it's a good curveball. You know, it's similar to Renato's in that it's very deep and it's over the top like that. I'd give Renato an edge on his curveball right now in terms of how it looks, but Workman has that type that can definitely be an out pitch for a swing and miss curveball. And he did throw his cutter a couple times. That was 86 to 87 miles an hour. Some nice late break, but he left it in the middle. He started it inside and it broke over the plate. The guy lined it into right field for a double. But I thought it was, you know, for the first outing, he looked okay. He didn't look that great performance wise and with his command for first outing. But you could see that the stuff is there. You know, there's definitely separation between him and Renato. But I'd say if I use three players, you know, you got Renato and then you got Workman and then you got Alex Wilson. In my opinion, like, you can tell the separation between those three guys. You know, where Wilson is, Workman's okay. A little bit more in terms of his stuff, right. And then Renato's more in terms of his stuff. Just to give you guys an idea.
So let's talk about the guys that you saw in Lowell last year, and kind of how they've changed or what you've seen development-wise of them, specifically with Vidic and Brents.
Okay, so I'll start with Brents. You know, he looked a lot better just in terms of his comfort at the plate and kind of slowing himself down. He looked much more like a professional baseball player, you know, this time around in spring training, you know, not just up there swinging at everything, kind of no plan, just expecting it to happen because, you know, he's done it in the past at the college level. He looked like he had much more of a plan at the plate in spring training. I saw him, I think he hit the last day we were there. He had three hits in the game. He had two doubles and a single. So he went a double to left field, a double to right field, and a single out the middle. So he was trying to use the field. You know, his swing was short through the strike zone. So he did look like starting to settle in. You know, I can see him kind of moving, you know, at Greenville, doing some good things there. Vidic.
Before we move on to Vidic, I want to just make a couple of comments on Brents. I pretty much agree with you. I think Brents was getting a little too pull happy at Lowell last year. This year, like, I pretty much agree with Melanie. He looked a lot calmer, and from the people I've been talking to, he's overcoming a few issues. He had some maturity issues last year, just going into the professional level. He's working on overcoming that this year, and that alone might he might make some strides just because of that. And then we've heard about this whole thing with his contacts might not be an issue. So I'm looking for Brents to have a really good year this year. I mean, his stats were pretty horrific last year, but look for big things from him this year, I think. Okay, sorry for interrupting, Melon. Go ahead, Vidic.
No, that's okay. So Vidic, you know, Vidic looked like Vidic. You know, if you've seen him last year, for me, I've heard from outside. You know, I've read other things, and I know that some people are split on Vidic. You know, they're not sure how his bat is going to play and how he's going to be defensively. And you know, some people I've read maybe he wasn't worthy of a first round pick. I really don't agree with any of that. I think that he's got those type of hands that you look for in a hitter, that he can hit the ball from the right field line to the left field line with authority. You know, he drilled a nice deep triple to straightaway center field in one of the games there, just a line shot, complete, you know, on a line right off the base of the wall. I've seen him go to right field off the wall before, just effortlessly. And then I had heard, you know, some that I think a couple of days after we left in another game, he pulled a home run pretty deep out to left field into the trees. So I think he's a good hitter. I like him a lot. And I think that, you know, he's going to be a high contact type guy, you know, potential to hit 300 in the major leagues down the line as he continues to mature, you know, and then we'll see how the power comes. Right now, he's pretty flat through the zone, but if he can just get a little bit of lift in that swing, you know, he can start tapping into his power. You know, he's not a classic right-handed hitter in terms of the frame for hit for power, but I think because of his bat speed and his wrists, he can definitely generate it. You know, I'm not sure, you know, maybe, you know, solid average type power at the big league level. And cool. then defensively, you know, he's still coming up to speed at third base. He looks rough. I kind of think that's going to, you know, when he gets to double A or triple A, they're going to think about moving him off the position. But for now, you know, he's working and he's putting in the effort to become a third baseman.
Cool. Hatfield, you, I think last time on the podcast, we talked a little about who the sleepers were going into the season. Do you have a new sleeper? Has your mind changed on a sleeper based on what you've seen at camp?
Do you guys remember who I had?
No idea.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's some of the same guys. I think I came away impressed with the same guys these guys were. Mostly, I mean, Tejeda and LaVarnway stick out. I don't know. I mean, like I said, there wasn't really anyone who I.
Well, how about this?
Caught.
Did you have? Were you either down on someone or more cynical about someone, and has that opinion changed?
Yeah, sure. I'm not necessarily down on, but I think we're going to see another, maybe at least stat-wise, middling season from Jose Vinicio. He's still tiny. I mean, especially when you put him next to Bogarts, there's definitely a marked difference at the plate. Vinicio's still a priority for them, though. You know, he was hitting top of the order. I mean, when he played in the I forget if it was a double A. I think it must have been a double A game he was in, but he was hitting third, which was clearly to get him at bats. They know that what he needs to do right now is play. But I still don't know if he's just even big enough to hit at this point. I don't know. I know, Mike, you commented on this too, on how small he still is.
That was going to be my answer to Ian's question too, is just Vinicio. He's just such a small kid, and it doesn't look like he has a ton of room to grow. I'm not down on him, but I don't.
Right.
I don't see why they would have given him $1.98 million yet. That hasn't hit me yet. He looks like a little league player. He's got pretty good control of his bat, pretty good bat speed. He's very good in the field. But do you give $1.98 million to a 16-year-old who's very good in the field? I just don't see it yet.
I don't even consider I consider what he did last season to be a successful season. So I'm a little surprised that you guys are cynical about him going in.
Well,
like,
I
just expect to wait on him, you know, 2 or 3 years.
Well, for me, what I'm saying is I don't expect to see him make a jump this year. Is I guess the point I was making. I think he's going to basically do what he did last year. He's going to go back to the GCL, and that's going to be fine. I mean, like we said, he's 17 now. I mean, he's still going to grow.
Right.
And I think with him, the money is that they're hoping he grows into his, like, and you know, can put on a lot of weight.
Well, let me put it this way.
The expectations are still the same to me, where I think last year was a success to him. I think he'll maybe slightly improve on those numbers this year, and even that will be a success. My comment is more about, I still don't get why they gave him $2 million.
Let me try to put it this way. We saw Tejeda as a 17-year-old, and he was skinny, and, you know, he was all bones. And now we're talking about him 4 years later as being too big for the middle infield. Maybe you need someone like Vinicio, who is just looks like a little leaguer, who when he eventually turns, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, into a man, he's still small enough to play the middle infield.
Could be. I mean, that could be a good point. If he just grows into somebody who's 5'11", 180 or something like that, maybe that's what he's capable of. And then he does stick it at shortstop or second base. Maybe that's what they're looking for. But I don't get it just yet. If I have $2 million to give out, do I give it to a Vinicio or do I give it to somebody at the top end of the draft? I don't see how the choice could have been for Vinicio, but hopefully I'm wrong, and hopefully he just turns out to be what they're projecting him to be. I just don't see it right now.
How about Kendrick Perkins? I think I heard some comments about adjustments he needed to make in camp.
Yeah, I think he's pretty raw. What was it last year? We read from Emil that he said he thought that he wasn't raw, but I was watching him with a couple guys, and you know, he's just raw. He has no concept of the strike zone right now, and his swings a lot of upper body. You know, no legs in his swing yet, and he's not. He gets fooled pretty easily, and he's still a little bit. He's still getting the motions down with his body. He's a good athlete, but he has a little bit less fluidity than some of the other guys, because I just don't think he has his balance and his coordination yet for his body, because he's a big kid and he's still, I think, growing into and learning how to deal with being a bigger guy and athletic. But he has good athleticism. He's just not there coordination wise yet. He just hasn't kind of got it yet.
Yeah, he's almost the opposite of Vinicio. He is ginormous for an 18-year-old. He could be, if he is able to get that coordination down for his size, he's just a beast.
He looks old too, right? He looks like he's 30
years old.
Yeah,
he does. Yeah. He's like, he almost has like wrinkles in his face, and he could pass for somebody that is in his 30s. You're right. It's weird.
I heard very good things about Lucas LeBlanc.
Yeah, Melon. Is that true? You were raving about him every day, right?
Yeah, I was expecting, you know, first he was with the Salem crew, which doesn't necessarily mean anything at first, but typically if a guy is kind of on pace to stay back extended, because actually we had him at Lowell, right, Mike, when we first started going, before we went down there, we thought he was going to be down at Lowell. So usually when we think a guy is going to be stay back and extended, he's typically with that group, you know, like Ciccini was with the extended group majority of the time that he was down there, you know, Bogarts. You can tell those two are ticketed to Lowell. But LeBlanc was up with the Salem crew. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, is he getting some at bats? And he flat, you know, he started, you know, put a couple swings in the ball, and he jolted one into the right center field gap for a triple. Very good first to third speed. You know, he flew around the bases from first to third there, and it was pretty much all hands. You know, a real nice hand swing, go out for the ball and drive it. So I was like, okay, you know, that's pretty interesting. And then, you know, later on he lines a shot through the hole at shortstop. You know, a nice hooks a liner through there. And you just see there's some skills. You know, there's some skills there. So I was pretty intrigued by the fact that, you know, he's probably not staying back, and it's extended spring training is going to begin. So the team think, you know, the organization thinks he's ready for a full season assignment, which leads you to believe that he's more, you know, more ahead coming in from a junior college than we kind of expected. So that kind of jumped out at me as a guy that's under the radar, and, you know, I'm not necessarily saying he's going to become top 20 prospect at the end of the season, but a guy who we didn't know anything about, and now we can see that he's, you know, he's got some skills and he's got some tools there to start working on.
And look for a Q&A with LeBlanc up on the site probably by the end of the week by our newest staff member, Elizabeth Dreesen, which we're pretty excited about.
Cool. And Chris, you had the gun on Drake Burton, I believe, right?
Yep.
And he looked good. You said that he looked much more filled out than last year.
Much more filled out than last year. You know, he's like Tejada. He was kind of like a kid when he was at Lowell. You know, I remember seeing him there, and you could tell, you know, he's like an 18, 19-year-old, look like a kid. Now, you know, he's starting to fill out and start to look like he looks like a Major League Baseball player in terms of the way he's filled out. And you know, he's maturing. He was like 93 in his first inning, touched up 95, you know, dipped a little bit in the second inning. But, you know, it was there. It was right in line with everything that we heard last season towards the tail end with Greenville. Snapping awesome, really nice chain curveballs, firing his fastball on the corners, you know, he elevated one on a guy, I think, for 94 to get a swing and a miss. So he's coming along. I think he's ready, you know, to take that step in high A and show why he's, you know, been moving up the rankings in the last 6 months.
Chris Hatfield.
Yes, sir.
Did you get eyes on any of the kind of middle tier high school draftees like Brandon Jacobs or Miles Head or Jason Thompson? Any of the guys from 08, 09?
Well, we saw, I know Jacobs was gone. Jacobs left early one day that I was there. I think he was just kind of getting a day off for maintenance or something. I don't even know what the deal was with that. We saw him going in pretty early after infield. But I'm trying to think. Thompson and Head were both. Well, Head was with Greenville. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even notice. Was Thompson with Greenville too? I think he must have been.
Yeah, he was with Greenville. I mean, they both of those guys looked like they've made the progress you'd expect from last year. Not a ton, but they both look pretty good. I mean, there's not a ton you can see. I watched both of them take BP for maybe 20 swings and then saw them three at bats. There's not a whole lot you can tell from that limited amount, but they look like they're getting a little bit more comfortable than last year, but they didn't look terrible. They didn't look amazing. They look like they're making strides.
Okay, so they showed basically normal progression that you would expect.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Yeah, I mean, one guy I know that's not now looking at names. I know we saw Shannon Wilkerson go deep at one point. Was that were you there for that, Melon, or was it Mike? I forget who was.
I was around. I was around. Singer saw that one, but I was.
Singer came running over to tell everybody that Wilkerson went deep. But we did hear good things about Wilkerson all weekend. Yeah. I just never happened to be there when it happened.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I mean, he did battle some injuries last year. I think it'll be interesting to see him if he can get healthy and stay healthy for a whole season. See what he can do now that he's got a season under his belt. You know, coming from he was the D3 or D2. I know
D2.
D2, okay.
Hedman
was the D3 one. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, coming from a D2 school into, you know, the professional ranks, you could expect a little bit of an adjustment period. It's not quite, you know, the same as adjusting from, you know, the SEC or something like that. But I'm interested in what he can do. I mean, he's got some speed and he's got some power and he's, you know, a gold glove level fielder in college, at least he was. So I'm interested to see how he can do. Probably ticketed for Salem this year. That's an intriguing outfield. They're going to have Wilkerson, Hissey, and Hazelbaker. I mean, we saw, you know, Hazelbaker, as these guys said already. I want to see what Hissey can do bouncing back for a second year in Salem. That kind of intrigues me more than, you know, some people might. I think it's interesting, especially now that they have a spot opened up with the trade of Fuentes, now that there's more bats to go around for those guys.
Two more guys, quick, and then I guess like we can open up for just a small general discussion. But Curry De La Cruz. He's always kind of. I've always had some interest in him. Did anyone see him?
I did. Yeah, I saw him. I saw him in instruction. I saw him out on this trip.
Any thoughts?
He kind of got a little bit of an uppercut in that swing that he comes up underneath the ball, which he does. He can create some lift, but he does miss some pitches because of that. And I'm thinking, you know, if he's at Lowell, you know, then as he moves up to Greenville, he's going to have to kind of adjust that swing to make more contact. He is a good athlete, and he looks real good in the field when you see him. You know, pretty solid in center field. He can track balls well, but just at the plate, I think that, you know, with the advancement in pitching he's going to see, I kind of think he's a guy who could go through a period of struggles with making contact. You know, high strikeouts, and you see if he can learn how to bring that swing down and get more of the ball, not come up underneath it.
And lastly, Garen Caccini. I know I've heard rave reviews about him, specifically from you, Melon. So do you guys want to? Do you have any comments on him?
If the other guys can go first if they want to pipe in on that.
My only comment with him was just how advanced his body was from what we saw, from what I expected. It was the first time I'd ever seen him in person. I had seen only a few videos from his high school days. And that must have might have even been his junior year videos, because he didn't play more than a few at bats his senior year. So the advancements he made body wise, he looks like he's very on the cusp of being having a major league body, which you don't really see from a lot of 18-year-olds. So that really surprised me. And just kind of the way that he carries himself, he has kind of almost a major league a swagger, and he just has control of his body really well, which is not something you see from someone that age. Melon and Hatfield, I'll pass any other comments off you have to you guys.
Well, was he the one, Melon, that you were showing me on your flip? I think you were showing me him in the cage. I mean, the thing that stuck out to me compared to the guys that are in that rookie group, I mean, you have some guys that are in there that just, it looks like they're still learning to swing. They're learning the mechanics of the major league swing. Whereas Cecchini, just the you know, the way that, I mean, I always say this, I'm no scout, Melon's the scout, but just that you can see the way he gets the hips open and just the drive he gets. It's very advanced at that level. I think, you know, granted he's following the Middlebrooks Renfro, you know, drafted out of high school, starting the next year in Lowell path, but I think he has a chance to maybe do a lot better, at least statistically, than they do, based on what I saw. I mean, Melon, I don't know if you concur, but
yeah, I think he's definitely ahead of where both of those Middlebrooks and Renfro, where when they came into the system, you know, I think what Cecchini is Hatfield pointed out, you know, the hip rotation that he gets, he gets it with his lower body right away, and he creates excellent bat speed. And I see him, you know, if he can, he was starting, it looked like I saw like six at bats, and he's making an effort to stay back and try to track balls. I think he's going to be behind the curve in terms of hitting off speed pitches, just because I think that's just where they are when they're that age. All of them struggle with off-speed pitches, even if they're a little bit more advanced. But I think that he can get enough fastballs and he can come up to speed with the off-speed pitches, you know, over the next couple months before he gets the load that he can have a pretty nice season. You know, I see why he was considered a mid first round type player. You know, when you see him, as Mike said, I was not expecting him to be as physically developed as that. You know, I was expecting more of like a skinny type shortstop type moving over to third base, but he's definitely, you know, the first thing you looked at him is, oh, he's a third baseman. There was no doubt that he was a third baseman with his body and the type of, you know, the way the ball comes off the bat and the backspin. I think that I see him, you know, with the chance to potentially be a top 10 prospect by the end of the season and have people saying, wow, that was a pretty good steal by the Red Sox to be able to get him when they got him, because, you know, it seems like they got a little lucky that he get, you know, it's not lucky for him, but, you know, they got lucky that he fell to him because there was concerns about his knee. If I was, you know, I guess if I was out there as an amateur guy and had got a chance to see him, I would have put a high recommendation in with the knee injury for a first round pick. That would just be me. I'd be screaming up at the director to drop that kid.
I think one of the things that's funny about him, and not funny, but interesting, he's going to be 20 this year, which is really, I mean, one of the oldest first year players I think we've had out of high school.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, this is going to be his 20-year-old season. He'll be 20 in a month or so.
Wow, I did not know that.
But yeah, I guess the so if you guys want to touch on any guys I missed or anyone that caught your eye.
Yeah, one guy I wanted to talk about was Chaseuan Lin. So he's always been a favorite of mine, somebody I projected as a fourth outfielder at as almost a floor. I still think that, but Ian, I guess you'll be sad to hear this because I know he's one of your favorites. My fear has always been that he's going to be the type that just grounds out to shortstop or second base on every single play once he starts getting to these higher levels, because he just makes such weak contact. And I just have kind of, you just even almost looking at his stat line, almost looking at the balls that he gets into play at the lower levels, you could just kind of foresee that was going to happen. And I think I got to see six or seven of his at-bats this weekend, that past weekend, plus probably about six or seven on Nesson with the big club. And I want to say out of those, however many at-bat, 18 at-bats, he grounded out to shortstop or second base 15 out of 18 times. So I'm a little bit worried that that's going to be his kind of MO from here on out, is just not getting the ball out of the infield and not being able to put the ball into play. But my hope is that he's still so young that he can still pack on some muscle and start hitting the ball with a little more authority. I'm just starting to get a little bit concerned that may not ever develop.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's certainly a valid concern with him. He's never hit for power. I don't think he will hit for power. I think the hope is that he becomes a line drive single hitter with a good eye at the plate and great defense.
Right, right. I mean, the other tools are just impeccable. So if he can just develop that, a guy that just laces singles, it would almost remind you of Ichiro Light a little bit. So that's the hope still, because those other tools are there.
Yeah. Everything's there. I mean, it's just like as Mike said, it's just that being able to get the bat, the good wit on the ball consistently. I mean, his throwing arm, I just because I go to a lot of the games, I see other guys from organizations a lot, and I never see an arm in the outfield like his, you know, come through the Eastern League. You know, he had the best outfield arm in the Eastern League last year. I'm sure when he gets to Pawtucket, you know, he's probably gonna have the best outfield arm in the International League. So, you know, and for me, just from what I see of the minors, he has the best outfield arm that I've seen. And defensively, I mean, it's so natural and so easy for him defensively. He just looks like an above average major league center fielder right now. So it is, if he can, you know, put the bat on the ball, he definitely, you know, can get those line drives. He's got everyday, you know, outfielder potential.
Hatfield, any guys you want to talk about?
Oh, sorry. Looking at the, I'm trying to think. I'm blanking. mm-hmm. Trust me, I was there. I swear.
Oh, Hatfield, you think about it for a second. I wanted to kind of, you can add this into this next section as well if there's anybody else that you want to cover. I want to ask, we have about 10 to 15 minutes left. In the last 10 minutes or so, I want to talk about kind of almost like a season preview. Talk about what prospect, maybe what one prospect you think can help the big club this season, who could have an impact or who might be a surprise impact on the club this season. Maybe just pass it along to each of you guys, and then also talk about what one prospect might not necessarily be the biggest surprise because you might see it coming, but who's going to make who is kind of set to make the biggest strides this year in terms of prospect status. So first, since Ian, you've been asking the questions, for the last few minutes, we'll move on to you. What one prospect do you expect to have the biggest impact at the major league level this year?
Well, I don't want to cop out and take the easy answer, you know, saying Kalish or...
Oh, but he's your boy from Jersey, right?
Yeah, but no, so I'll say maybe Juan Carlos Linares. I think he, Tito has taken the shine to him. I think he's someone who kind of is instantly appealing because you see him. He's a very aggressive player. He puts the ball in play a lot. I think that's something that could be that in spring training that looks pretty good. And I think he might be the, you know, if the Sox do need a right-handed outfielder, he could be the next guy called up. And I think I could see him, you know, getting a decent share of at bats later in the season if something happens to Drew or Ellsbury or Crawford.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How about you, Hatfield? What do you think?
As far as helping at the major league level, I could see Yamaiko Navarro if they get into a bind as far as, you know, a guy going down for a little bit if, you know, say something happens in the infield. But again, they also have Lowry, so maybe not. Maybe I will cop out and go with Kalish because that is where they're, you know, maybe a little bit thin. But they're not even. I just don't know if in the lineup many guys are going to have a chance to come up because their bench is deeper than I can remember it being in a long, long time. You know,
right? It's almost going to take an injury or two for anybody to break this roster, save for maybe somebody knocking out the last couple guys out of the bullpen. It's going to take an injury almost, right? I mean,
it's going to take multiple injuries. It's going to take multiple injuries because they're going to, what they'll do, I mean, I could see Navarro coming up, which is why I kind of gravitate to him. But at the same time, I could see him coming up for a couple of weeks and then going right back down after getting maybe a couple of bats. You know, because
That was going to be my answer was Navarro, was just because he can play second, third, and short. And Tito has also seemed to take a shine to him as well.
Spears is
right.
That
that's what I was going to say. Now it just seems like over the past week that hearing Francona on Nass and talk about Spears and Drew Sutton yesterday. He loves those guys, and they're the guys that might come up now if there's an injury. And they both had pretty good springs.
Yeah, so, but the problem with that is that they're not on the 40 man though, and I can't if there's a 2 week injury, I can't see them making room. The way that they would just Navarro, you can bring him up and send him right back down. And that's the one thing that they're lacking is players with options to go up or come down. I mean, if they wind up going with Albers for that last spot in the bullpen, they don't have anybody with options. You know, if they on the bench, they don't really have anybody with options to send down. So I think unless they know it's a situation like Pedroia and Euculus last year where they're going to be out for a while, I don't know. I feel like they're almost talking up Spears and Sutton in the hopes of trading them. I really do. There's just no room. There's no room for both of them.
Right. I mean, the Pawtucket infield right now, you have Spears, Navarro, Iglesias, Sutton, and then Luna is supposed to be getting healthy soon. Dlugic is supposed to be getting healthy soon. Jorge Jimenez, Aaron Bates plays the first base. It's just that's a jam-packed infield of decent players.
Yeah.
But Navarro is one that, I mean, he could come up, have some versatility. He has the options. He has a little bit of major league experience now. And he's starting, I think, to reach that age where he can translate his BP power into game power. I think he's just got to work on, for whatever time he's in Pawtucket this year, and learn how to hit a curveball a little bit, which is what he really struggled with last year during his September call-up. All right, I think we skipped over Mellon. Who was your guy that you think might contribute to the major league level?
I'll throw Felix Dubron out there. You know, once he gets healthy and going, I think, you know, you look at the last three bullpen spots, Wakefield, Denny Reyes, Matt Albers, and then we got Matsuzaka in the starting rotation, who I guess we can't trust. You know, over the last two seasons, he's kind of been, you know, hurt or whatever. And then who knows, Beckett, Buchholz, Lackey, Lester, any one of those guys is always a pitch away from going down too. So, you know, Dubron, you know, he has the pedigree. He pitched okay last year when he was up in his call up. You know, so I think that he's the guy who's going to, you know, step in over the course of the season and have the biggest impact, because like you guys said, with the position players, it's kind of like filtering in bit parts. But with Dubron, I think he, you know, by the end of the season, he has a chance to potentially, you know, make 10 starts for the major league team.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anybody else we want to toss out there? I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, besides infield, you got the outfield, obviously, with Linares is a potential guy, Kalish potential guy, and then even Nava or Reddick are even further down the depth chart. So there's just, you're covered at almost every position if there is an injury, because there's some pretty nice depth there in Pawtucket. So that's something to look forward to if there actually is an injury, that there's guys there that can hopefully step in and take the reins temporarily. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk about is this is something like we've talked about the last couple of podcasts. We asked who was going to be your breakout guy or who's going to be your surprise guy. This doesn't have to be a surprise. I mean, it could be the guy that's ranked first in the system now and you just think he's going to get all that much better. But who's going to make big strides this year and just kind of go from being maybe somebody that goes from a mid-level prospect to a top-level prospect, maybe somebody that goes from a top-level prospect to an elite prospect. Who's going to make the big strides? Ian, anybody strike your fancy in terms of who you think is going to make that type of move?
Well, yeah. All spring training, from what I've seen of Oscar Tejeda, he just you know, reeks of someone who's on the cusp of becoming a star.
Yep.
I remember when I saw him in Greenville, I think it must have been 3 or 4 years ago. It was in Lakewood, but when he was on Greenville, he couldn't really even pull a ball. He wasn't strong enough to pull a ball. So everything, he was kind of going the other way. When I seen him this spring training, that one home run he hit, I guess it was against the Marlins, where he basically just dropped the bat head and the ball flew out. He's made such strides in the 3 years that he's been, you know, on the full season roster, that I'm really hoping that he develops into a top 25 prospect.
Yeah, I think I see that. I think I see that as potential too. I mean, he's definitely the first guy that comes to, I would think, comes to most people's minds when this type of question is asked, just precisely because what you said. He has that feel right now, like he's about to turn the corner into something big, both in terms of his look, his approach, and the stats he's been putting up so far this spring. It seems like it could be all coming together for him, and that would be a really, really cool thing to watch over the course of this season. So something to watch out for when he's in Double A. How about you, Mellon? What do you think?
Well, I agree with both of you guys on Tejeda. You know, that's the first guy that jumps out, and then to me, the guy who has a chance, I think, to really make big strides is Cecchini. I think that he can, you know, make some strides, and I see him, you know, with the potential to be a top 10 SoxProspects.com player at the end of the season. You know, I think he has it there to start trending as, you know, that next crop of position players coming up, and a guy who, you know, you look down, you know, 3-4 years from now, who kind of people are already pegging as, you know, that's the guy who's going to be coming up and be your pedigree prospect and be a blue chipper for you. So that would be my guy for this season.
Okay, Hatfield?
Well, I'm going to only half answer your question, I guess. Mm-hmm. The guy who's coming to mind for me, I don't think is going to do that this year, but next is Stomi Pimentel. I see him taking almost the, you know, looking at him heading up to Portland this year, I see almost kind of, I think he'll have the first season in Portland that maybe Felix DuBrant had, where, you know, this is the first kind of workhorse, get yourself ready to contribute to the club next season type situation, where this year he'll work on the consistency to where next year is when he can really break out. I think he'll have he'll basically do next year in 2012. I see him doing what DuBrant did last year, where he just immediately kind of became this player that, okay, he's in the mix for Boston. They're able to rely on him. I don't think that's going to happen this year. But
I agree. I mean, I think that they've had such similar career tracks,
right?
Just 2 or 3 years apart. That's definitely a good possibility.
Yeah, I mean, if he can get that curveball to be as consistent as it was at times last year, I mean, when I saw him, he was just unhittable. If he can get the curveball there, if he can, you know, locate the fastball, then I think he could be a really, really, like, he could be a middle rotation pitcher easily if he can just harness those two things. In my opinion,
Mellon, were you going to chirp in something there?
Yeah, I'd like to see how Pimentel's doing with developing a two-seam fastball this season. You know, I think that if he just goes up, you know, he's never really had that pitch for him all the way up. You know, he hasn't been able to really master it yet. And if he's just going to go out there and try to throw four-seam fastballs in Double-A, I think in the first month or two, you could see some, you know, some high hit totals, maybe some home runs. You know, he's got to learn how to get some. He's got to get something, you know, with some a little bit more movement to it than his four seam, you know, be able to pound, you know, with a two seam and then spot up with his four seam, you know, to take advantage of, you know, not just showing guys consistently 93 to 95 miles an hour with a fastball. They're just going to sit all over it, even though his changeup is a, you know, a plus pitch right now, and his curveball has the potential to be a plus pitch. He's got to get that two seam fastball. I think that should be probably number one in terms of his development, you know, near term development goals, is to develop some kind of either cutter or two seamer that he can start pounding the strike zone with, and then look to elevate his fastball and spot it and blow guys away with it, because he doesn't get a ton of swing and misses with his fastball right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, I'll end it with my guy who I think is going to make big strides this year is Jeremy Hazelbaker. I see him as a guy that has potential this season to maybe someone that hits 290 with 20 home runs and 70 stolen bases. And when you put up that type of numbers, that's when people's eyes start popping up and saying, wow, this guy has some crazy athleticism and crazy tools that could help at the major league level. So I'm really excited to watch what he does at Salem this year, especially with the increased size, hoping that he keeps the same level of speed he did last year with the 63 stolen bases, because that would be really impressive to have that power of speed and combo coming up through the system. Somebody really interesting to watch. All right, guys. I mean, I think we're going to wrap it up. I mean, that was our season preview for for March. We'll be back on in about a month from now to cover the first 3 weeks of the season. Between now and then, the seasons are opening up on April 7th in just under 2 weeks. So that'll be something interesting to watch. After the season starts, I mean, keep coming to our news page with a cup of coffee starting. Chris Mellon, you're going to start up some more features, right? The book is going to be coming regularly. The Ladder, I would imagine. Is that right, Chris?
Yeah, that'll be third week of April. The book will probably start after Portland's opening weekend up there, April right. 7th, 10th.
Yeah. I mean, we hope to have guys at Portland's opening weekend, at Pawtucket's opening weekend. I hope to make it to either opening night or the second game of the season. Hopefully Hatfield can make it to one game in Salem before the next podcast. No guarantees. He's pretty busy with law school, but if he can make it, we'll have a lot of the angles covered for every one of the affiliates. So some interesting stuff to watch between now and then. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Take a look at the room.